My name is Mackenzie, and I started a GoFundMe for the adoptive mother of a nonverbal autistic child. The mother had lost her job because she wasn't able to find adequate care for this autistic child. So she really needed some help with living expenses, paying some back bills. So I launched a GoFundMe to help support them during this crisis. And we raised about $10,000 within just a couple of months. I think that the surprising thing was by telling a clear story and just like really being very clear about what we needed, we had some really generous donations from people who were really moved by the situation that this family was struggling with.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This podcast is supported by GoFundMe.
0141 951 1025. It's time to talk football. It's Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Good evening and welcome to Clyde One Super Scoreboard as we reach the midway point of a big European week. Nine-man Celtic lose their Champions League opener, going down 2-0 at Feyenoord. Nicholas Raskin is out injured for Rangers ahead of Real Betis, and Aberdeen against Frankfurt is just around the corner as well. I'm Gordon Duncan, and joining me tonight you have Marvin Bartley and Hugh Keevans.
Well, I'd argue that Celtic possibly got off lightly last night with a 2-0 defeat. Two other goals disallowed by VAR, a missed penalty. Not a great night for Brendan Rodgers, and I think reckless on the part of Thiago Tom and Gustav Lagerbäck in getting sent off. As for tomorrow night, bad news for Michael Beale. He'd already lost Todd Cantwell. Now he's lost his other big signing in Raskin. And for Aberdeen in Frankfurt, Marv, I don't give them an earthly.
Will we just address the elephant in the room, though?
Please.
Ole Gunnar Shugster here has just dashed into the studio. You talk about super subs. You've never seen anything like it. We had a slight staffing issue on the show. This man arrived 15 seconds before we went on air. He's looking a bit windswept. He might have mispronounced Lager Bielka, but yeah, we'll let him away with it, Marvin, because what an entrance that was.
Absolutely fantastic. And I much prefer sitting next to you, Hugh, than Simon Donnelly, if he is watching. So,
see, I was almost later than a Marvin Bartley tackle, honestly.
He's bailed us out. Imagine it was just you and I between now and 8 o'clock.
We'd have been struggling.
But it's a busy midweek. Is it? What else do you want? Champions League football to look back on, Europa League football to look forward to. You throw Aberdeen into the mix as well. Injury news for Rangers. It is all happening.
It really is. I really enjoy watching our teams in Europe as well. You know, whenever a Scottish team are playing, whoever they might be, I'm always supporting them. So obviously watched the Celtic game yesterday, which Hughes touched on a little bit there. I thought for the first half, I thought they were very, very good. You know, and then obviously moving forward to the games with Rangers and Aberdeen playing tomorrow. So hopefully those two can get a positive result. Because like I said, it's good for the country.
No shortage of talking points. So Celtic fans, what did you make of last night? How do you sum it up overall? Obviously it's a defeat and that's a bad outcome. How does it leave you for the rest of the group? What did you make of the performance? As Marvin says, I think most people felt the first half was encouraging up to a point. Mm-hmm. And then it all went wrong in defensive scenarios and disciplinary as well. Did the ref get those right? Do you have any grumbles with the red cards? All of your thoughts, please, on last night's game in Rotterdam. Get them in right now, because I've been looking at social media all day. I know you have a lot to say about it, so why not give us a call on 0141 951 1025. Since it is UEFA competition, let's use UEFA speak. It is match day minus one for you Rangers fans. So what do you think ahead of tomorrow? The bad injury news just keeps on coming. It was Danilo at the weekend. It's now Nicholas Raskin. Todd Cantwell still out, remember. So how damaging is that? How big a blow is it overall? How would you fix it tomorrow? What's your solution tomorrow? And do you hold out much hope of a Rangers win and progression from this group? Same number. Get your calls in. 0141 951 1025. And Aberdeen fans, even Mr. Positive Marvin Bartley, I think, is unlikely to tip you to get a result tomorrow night. Why not come on and argue your case? If you think it can be done, let us know. 0141 951 1025. It is a busy, busy old week, Hugh.
Yeah, I mean, with the best will in the world, we've got an Aberdeen team who are joint bottom of the Premiership. They have had a very disappointing start to the season with no wins as yet on the board. They were shocking, I thought, against the Hearts at the weekend. And they're playing a German team who are in good form. As for Rangers, like Celtic, they have been hampered seriously by injury. Celtic last night still feeling the effects of no Cameron Carter-Vickers and no Mike Navrovsky. An honourable mention to Liam Scales. I think he continues to play above and beyond the call of duty. But no Todd Cantwell for Rangers tomorrow night, no Nicholas Raskin, no Danilo out for weeks because of that fractured cheekbone. They have it all to do. Even though Real Betis were thumped 5-0 by Barcelona at the weekend, they will present a formidable challenge tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a massive challenge in terms of the injuries, as Hugh's saying there. And, you know, there'll be an Ibrox, you know, crowd who expect as well. You know, they won't really care about the injuries. You know, they've voiced their opinions on how the team have started. You know, maybe a lack of cohesion as well that seems to be in there. And for Michael Beale, it doesn't get any easier. You know, when you're losing your players, you know, it seems game by game, week by week, it makes it even more difficult for him to get a settled side together. But, you know, that Real Betis did lose 5-0 at the weekend, and, you know, Rangers have to take positives from that because, you know, they're expected to win the game tomorrow.
The talking points are staring us in the face tonight. Celtic fans, very simply, what did you make of last night? We could probably dedicate a whole show to that, but we won't get the chance because Rangers fans, similarly, a whole show in terms of what do you expect tomorrow? How big a blow is the Nicholas Raskin injury? We're going to hear from some of the main characters involved in both and then Aberdeen as well. What are you thinking? Get your calls in, please. 0141 951 1025. That's the number that Brian in Moss Park has dialed. Kick us off, Brian. As a Celtic fan, what did you make of last night?
I think everybody's going to go to the main points. My points are a wee bit different. My points concern Rio Hatate. I think at three occasions he could have played in Kyogo. It was a far better chance of scoring. And rather than that, I think he's been selfish. I think he's probably trying to put himself possibly in the shot window, but trying to show people how good he thinks he is rather than how good he actually is. And he was playing for the benefit of the team more so, just solely for himself.
A trifle harsh, Brian. A trifle harsh for me because, you know, Hatate can't go anywhere until January. And you are surmising that he does want to go. He came in last night, very little game time this season because of injury. And yes, there were times when he looked laboured, and yes, he had to be taken off before the end. But, you know, who got pass marks for Celtic last night? You know, Liam Scales for one, but Alistair Johnston certainly for two. But there weren't that many, Brian, that would get pass marks, including Rio Hatate.
Correct. You're not answering my question. I wasn't commenting on his performance. I was commenting on three occasions. It was nothing to do with tiredness or whatever.
But that is his performance. You say that on three occasions during his performance he could have done better. What player doesn't do that during a game? What player doesn't make the wrong decision at a vital moment? So, you know, he didn't do it deliberately. He's a guy trying to find his feet once again.
I would beg to differ, but McKeown was a far better finisher than him, and for the benefit.
Hold on. Are you saying he did it deliberately?
I think Brian genuinely has dropped off. We'll try and get him back. Well, look, you can probably separate this into two distinct points, Marvin. On those moments, Brian is right. There's the one in particular where he wins it back and it is just begging to be rolled into Kyogo's path, and he tries to go for goal himself and there's a defender right in front of him and he hits it off his legs. The main sort of learning point we seemed to take away from Celtic in the Champions League last season was they need to be more clinical. Everyone always bangs on about style and, you know, parking the bus or being more pragmatic, all these buzz phrases. But really, if they'd taken their chances last season, it could, and I stress that, could have been a bit different. Is that match sharpness, as Hugh mentions, can these things just happen? Or has Brian managed to join the dots perfectly and say that that's all because he wants a move?
No, it's a bit of both from what Hugh's saying. You know, I don't agree for a single second that, you know, he's taking the shot and rather than the pass because he's thinking about the move and scoring a goal, because I think he does enough between both boxes for teams, if they do like him as a player, to see him. I think, you know, the one he does, he should roll Kyogo in, and I think he'll look back himself and he'll know that. But it does come down to match sharpness as well. When you've not played for a few weeks, then you're going into such a tough game, by the way, you know, Champions League game. I mean, you have to play out your skin and beat your best at the best of times. So, you know, it's not down to that at all. You know, he's obviously taken a shot because at that moment in time, he thought it was the best option. We can all look back and it's easy to watch things on the screen, isn't it? Start pausing them and say, you should have done this or should have done that. I agree, he should have rolled him in. And I think 3 or 4 weeks down the line, when he is a little bit sharper and his match fitness is there, and it's not just a physical thing, it's a mental thing as well when you're playing. When you've not played for a while, mentally you start to think slower and, you know, you start to make mistakes you don't normally make. So I think in 3 or 4 weeks' time, when he's up to speed, he would have definitely rolled him in.
Here's the thing, Hugh. Brian might be right. Rio Hatate might want a way. But we'll never, Brian will never know, we'll certainly never know if that is behind the misplaced or the decision not to pass to Kyogo.
If my memory serves me correctly, he played in Daizen Maeda at one point and it resulted in what was the closest Celtic came to a goal. But to suggest that a player, mid-September, is deliberately trying to play for a move which cannot take place until January at the earliest and sacrifice his team's prospects in the Champions League, I think that's a grossly unfair criticism.
Brian, we'll just agree to disagree, right? Because it was a good point, clearly, you can in the sense that it's got everyone arguing. What about more general, though? Because it's a very specific one. As a Celtic fan, what do you think about, you know, performance, result, the kind of general picture?
I think it was a good performance. I think fairly skilled. I'm a big fan of skills, but Joe Hart, I'd love to know what he was thinking. His position was shocking. And the two sending off, they were idiotic. And I think their free kick was a touch soft as well. And I think they're certainly not the team that we thought they were. I am now, and I think they're there for the taking, Parkhead.
That can, well, yeah, maybe we'll find out, but that can almost bring its own frustration, Marvin, because up to, what was it, at 44 minutes,
yeah,
Celtic are well in a game, and everyone talks about it being the top seeds in the group or the top one team in the group, and it's away from home. You know, we've seen numerous Champions League nights where our teams have to hold their hands up and say, oh, it's a much better team. That maybe wasn't one of them, but yet Celtic still have no points, so it doesn't give you any encouragement. It can sometimes be even more frustrating.
Yeah, I think it will be highly frustrating for Brendan. You know, I think the positives you can take from it, like you said, the first 44 minutes with a team of an awful lot of injuries, by the way. So when he's talking about kind of the return tie and he's got those players back, you know, and you're playing at Celtic Park with the fans behind you, you definitely fancy winning that game, as Brian's just said there. You know, he did make comments on the sending offs. The first one for me is diabolical. You know, the one where the penalty's given, that for me can't be a second booking. For me, it's not even a foul. You know, I've been in that position so many times as a defender, and you do put your arm across, and it brushes his chest and then he goes down and makes a meal of it and obviously holds his face. I could not believe that was given first and foremost as a foul and secondly as a second booking. In terms of the second one, that is a red card. You know, when you see it at the time, I thought, oh, was he just going in quickly? But when you look at where his studs catch the opposition player, it becomes reckless. So for me, that was a red card.
I think this is a myth, by the way. They're there for the taking at Celtic Park. Celtic don't take many people at Celtic Park in Europe. It's a myth.
Yeah, well, it's one of those phrases that we can only wait. You know, one of you will be right. But I think Brian's more general point is Feyenoord weren't amazing. This is not like, oh, no. You know, Celtic couldn't have done any more on the night. Clearly, you watch that first 44 minutes and you think there is nothing between these sides. And then Celtic find a series of ways to undo that thereafter.
Yeah, which again is a Celtic failing in European competition. There's no doubt that Kyogo's in the wrong place in the wall. And there's no doubt that Kyogo ducks out the way of the ball. But Joe Hart, a goalkeeper of his calibre, should have dealt with it far better than he did. And yes, everyone went on about Feyenoord and the number of goals he had scored in the Eredivisie before Celtic played there. And they had scored, 17 in 4 games or something. Yes, they were not that great. But I go back to the original point that I made. They scored twice. They missed a penalty. And they had 2 others disallowed. So Celtic got off lightly.
I always think the thing about disallowed, though, they're disallowed for a reason. If they're correctly disallowed, I don't think you then use that as a stick to beat a team with. You could score 15 disallowed goals.
An indication of pressure then.
Yeah, fair enough.
The Celtic did not do enough. They did not look out of their depth but they did not do enough to get a draw, far less win.
What did you make of the red cards? Marvin, I think, said diabolical, the first one. Doesn't think that's ever a red.
No, for
Lagerbielke.
Lagerbielke, no, I thought that he was harshly dealt with. But Thiago Tom, nah, reckless.
Home.
Home.
But listen, you can do anything you want tonight. You came in at 1 minute past six and bailed us out tonight.
He lasted 11 minutes on the pitch, and I'll allow his age to come into consideration. He's 20 years old. This is the Champions League. But he was rash and reckless and had to go.
Let's hear from Brendan Rodgers. This was his take on the red card.
There's no drama, the ball's running through the goalkeeper. I think it's inexperienced by the two guys. You just got to let the ball run through. You don't have to be in the fight or use your arm. I still thought it was a bit harsh, but I can see maybe why the ref gave it. But we can avoid that situation for sure. And the second one again, it's you know, a young player, 20 years of age, very committed. And but at this level, you can't go to ground. So I didn't think it was at the time, but just looking at it back, I mean, you see it slowed. His foot's up. So at this level, you'll get punished for that.
Fair play to Brendan Rodgers, because I think, Marvin,
I'm surprised.
The first one, I'm just imagining myself if that was a Scotland player sent off for that, or someone in claret and amber. I don't think I would be quite as understanding, because is he even alludes to the ball's actually going to the goalkeeper. So not Lagerbielke doesn't really prevent, you know, the attacker getting to the ball. He's also sort of off balance, and I'm kind of,
yeah.
I don't think anyone's complaining if that isn't given.
Really, are they? Even if the ball's there and he puts his arm there, it's irrelevant. Mm. You know, I'm extremely surprised that, you know, Brendan's obviously came out and said what he said. You know, listen, maybe he's thinking, I can't change it, so what's the point?
I always say this. I like that for a manager. Yeah. He has to control what he can.
Yeah, of course.
And try and stop those situations happening again.
Yeah, but we can come to the defence of the player and of Brendan in this situation. Like. Yeah, because it's harsh.
Let's bring in Alec, who's also a Celtic fan. How did you see it last night, Alec?
Hi, I've got two quick points. Right, first point is McGregor, right? He's the captain of that team. He must have seen what was going on there with Keogh in that defensive wall. He should have pulled him out of there. No, you're too small to be in there. He should have pulled him out. And my second point is...
Let's do that first. That's a good point. Let's do it first. Right, Marvin, Martin O'Neill, I noticed in the TV coverage, very clear, you know, that the smallest player in the wall shouldn't be on the end of it. I didn't know it was as clear as that. Is that the way you
Well, it depends on your setup, doesn't it? Some goalkeepers like to have a small one if it's on that side so they can potentially see it quicker. You know,
right,
so if the ball's coming, they get more of a view on it. Joe Hart would have set that wall up. You know, so it's his preference as to why each player is in each position. If not, normally it's on the wall. You know, you're first in the wall, fourth in the wall, you're the charger, for example. And that, Joe Hart would sit down with the goalkeeper coach and they'll come up with that. But also at the time, if Joe Hart thought that Kyogo was in the wrong place, he needs to scream and get somebody else there.
So it's more an issue of Kyogo moving rather than the fact that he was in the wall in the first place.
Yeah, because if he jumps and heads the ball or doesn't duck, rather.
Because I suppose that's the thing, Hugh. I could be wrong, right? Just my sort of mental image. I don't think it goes over Kyogo's head as such.
No, it doesn't.
So, and he sort of moves, which kind of changes the angle. Kyogo, at the same height that he is, if he'd stayed in the right position, it would have been a fine. He would have been an effective member of the wall, presumably.
Well, presumably, but I'm glad that Marvin has picked up on the point that this is not Callum McGregor's fault. We're getting a pattern emerging here that. Rio Hatate is trying to get a move and therefore didn't pass to the right players. Now it's the captain who should have changed the wall while the game was in play. But as Marvin points out, goalkeeper's responsibility. And I go back to it.
Yeah, but you're relying on him not to move, though, the way he did. And duck and sort of run out, turn his back, duck.
I also think the distance the ball had to travel, Joe Hart should have got his feet better. Should have saved it.
What do you make of that, Alec? Do you blame Joe Hart at all for it?
Yeah, I blame him. But you're wrong. You're wrong. The man in charge is a captain. He decided he should be saying, no, he's not going there.
Well, I'm sitting beside a seasoned professional who has been assistant manager at Livingston, is now manager of Queen of the South, and he's telling you the goalkeeper sets up the wall. And if Joe Hart thought Kyogo was in the wrong place, then Joe Hart should have signalled the danger.
I mean, Joe Hart was clearly annoyed at what happened. You could see him shouting at the wall. But I think that, again, was in terms of the movement and the way Kyogo turned. How much blame should be put on Joe Hart?
Oh, for me, in terms of the blame, Joe Hart sets the wall up, but if somebody begins to move...
No, sorry. I mean thereafter.
Oh.
With the shot.
I think, you know, Kogo makes it a lot more difficult for Hart because when he does duck, he has to wait for the ball then to go past him. And then, listen, I think he'll look back and think he should still save it. I do think he should still save that, definitely. You know, regardless of the ball, regardless of somebody's ducking, he should get his hands to that and push it, you know, clear of danger. But can I just comment on, see, Alex saying it's the captain's fault. That's not at all true. You know, Callum McGregor is doing his own job. That's the goalkeeper. That's on the goalkeeper to set that up. You know, that, as I said, that's probably on the wall for all Celtic players to know where they are. They practice that in training. This is where you are. If somebody's in the wrong position, then it's on the person that's not in the correct position. It's on Kyogo for them not pulling that player in and saying, stand here, and also for him ducking. So it's not on the captain at all for me.
Let's quickly go to your second point, Alec, because I think Kyogo sort of links the 2 points. Is that fair?
Yes, he does. What is Brendan Rodgers doing with Kyogo? What is he doing? It'd be better not playing him, because he's not getting the ball at all. He's not getting the ball at all. In that position he's playing, he's not getting the ball. Last season, he was on the ball constantly. He's not getting the ball, and he's not going to score goals for what he's doing. He'd be lucky if he had about 3 touches last night.
If you voluntarily do without Kyogo Furuhashi, you're in bother. Mm. Because there's nobody...
I think Alex more on about, you know, is he playing a bit too deep this season, that sort of thing?
For me, yeah, without doubt. But this is the essential difference between Ange Postecoglou and Brendan Rodgers. Ange Postecoglou had a style of play which really suited Kyogo and Maeda and Abada and everybody else, because Celtic won the treble, therefore it suited them. But Brendan Rodgers will have to be given time to put the Brendan Rodgers style into Celtic's play. And at the moment, last night was again another example of Celtic not having had a convincing 90 minutes at any point since the season started with the home game against Ross County.
Was that a feature of last night, Marvin, that hindered Celtic? Or did Celtic just get a number of big moments in this game wrong, which then throws everything else into the spotlight?
Yeah, I think, you know, like you said, the big moments kind of went against them. And then when that does happen, you know, you start to dissect absolutely everything that happens in the game. You know, obviously Alex is talking about Kyogo and saying he's coming too deep and you're better off not playing him. It's the way that obviously Brendan wants him to play. But I also remember last season when he was scoring goals and staying higher up, people said he could get more involved. So, you know, it's about finding that happy medium. I think when you go into a club and you've got a striker like that scoring those goals, you leave them to it. You know, you leave them doing exactly the same stuff and you maybe alter things in and around them.
It's his goal at the weekend. He's not doing that, I take it, but it just... Fewer and far between.
Yeah, because he's obviously coming deeper to play other players in. Was it Ross County where he comes off the game and then, you know, plays it around the corner and he gets a fantastic assist for that? You know, that last season he probably wouldn't have got that. So, you know, it's just about, like you said, them being ruthless in the final third.
Thank you, Alec. 01419511025. What did you make of it last night? Let us know right now, please.
You are the voice of Scottish football. Call 01419511025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Hugh Keevans and Marvin Bartley are here picking over what went wrong for Celtic in Rotterdam last night. So why not tell them that they're wrong and you know exactly what happened? Pick up that phone and let us know, or tweet us at Clyde SSB. And of course, plenty more time for us to look forward to European action for the likes of Rangers, injuries, even more injuries today, and Aberdeen as well. But let's continue on the theme of Rotterdam last night with Gary, who's in Blantyre. How are you, Gary?
Yeah, good, Gordon.
What's your take on some of those big moments last night then?
So, I think if a free kick's feel like kind of 25 yards or further out than 25 yards, I think you should do away with the wall. And just if a player wants to have a shot for 25 yards, just at the goalkeeper, if it's going to be a really good strike, to beat a keeper for that distance, bearing in mind the kind of success rate of penalties, 12 yards. So, yeah, I think it could be interesting.
I've heard the theory before, Marvin. What do you think of that? From that distance, Milton, there must be a reason that teams continue to do it, but if you get it wrong last night, the wall does hit, it can hinder you because the goalkeeper's unsighted, it gives the player an obvious place to sort of aim. I get obviously why it's there, but...
The wall's there, like you said, the wall's there to do its job though, but... When it doesn't, it can end like that. You know, I do get what Gary's saying, but I think if you start giving players that sort of distance with a dead ball, with no wall there, you're going to start conceding a lot more goals than you should from that distance. Like you said, if the wall does its job there, it's really, really difficult to score. But as soon as it starts to, you know, pull apart, goes through the middle of the wall, people start ducking out of the way, it makes it, you know, more difficult for the goalie.
I think you have to play the percentages.
Yeah.
You know, you have to concede that...
You're not remembering the ones that hit the wall, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, by and large, it's called a defensive wall for one reason. It can be an aid to your defence.
I know what Gary means, though, in the sense, just on a very general basis, when you see that lining up last night, you think, well, this is going to have to be special to go in.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, and obviously it did. Gary, let's move aside from the theory. I don't think you've won them over. Celtic have the ball last night. How much blame do you put on Kyogo? How much can Joe Hart do?
I think, no one I refer back to that initial point, but I think Joe Hart gives far too much space to his left-hand side. Whereas, if he's a bit kind of more central, he gets there. Although I do think he was slow with his feet. It's a messy goal, that you say. It wasn't a great strike, but it went in, and that was kind of typically Celtic in the match. Don't look at their depth and then just kind of shoot yourself in the foot. A bit disappointed.
I think
one more back to Gary. Just when you say kind of typically, Gary, you'll sort of keep note of these more than I do, and you watch these games filled with emotion. Is there something quite calamitous at times about Celtic in Europe in recent seasons? Does it feel like there's always maybe a big defensive lapse or a sending off or that last night? Does that feel like a thing for you, Celtic fans?
I wouldn't say calamitous. Calamitous is like getting beat 7-1 at home.
Sure. No, I just mean sort of individual moments.
I just think that. Things seem to go against us sometimes. Like, again, even when we've been in top matches in the past, especially away from home, it just seems to be a kind of lapse of concentration or a refereeing mistake, maybe. But it just always seems to be something that trips us up.
Mm. I mean, Ange Postecoglou was brilliant for Celtic for two seasons, absolutely brilliant. But he was useless in Europe as well. They had a campaign where Celtic finished bottom, didn't get Europa League, scored 4 goals, got 2 points, and that was it.
Yeah, calamitous probably was the wrong word, Marvin, but that would be, you know, these games are hard enough. That was the point I was trying to make. So take that last season. You got the Celtic were going to lose in the Bernabeu anyway. We gave you two penalties in the Bernabeu. It's 2 red cards last night. Add into that the goal that really changes the game seems like it's completely avoidable. Just feels like being in the game generally is one part, but then you've got to get those big moments right as well.
Yeah, you definitely do. And, you know, when you look at our teams and they are playing in the Champions League, they have to be perfect. They really, really do. Because you look at the financial differences between the clubs and some of the people you're going up against, it makes it ever so difficult. And like you said, when you get the big moments wrong in those games, you know, you are punished. You really are punished. You saw that with Celtic yesterday. It's like domestically when teams go and play at Celtic Park, you have to be perfect. And you need your opposition to be a little bit off it. And that's when, you know, you're eating at the top table. These are the calibre of players and teams that you are playing against. So I think it's harsh for us to sit here and say, you know what, Celtic are getting the big moments wrong. But yeah, they are doing that, Gordon. But sometimes it's down to, you know, teams wearing them down. They're not used to playing at that kind of level, that tempo. So it's extremely difficult, you know. And as Hugh said there, you know, as good as Ange was for them, even in Europe, they struggled, you know, definitely the first campaign that he had. So it is tough and it's something that they need to improve on. But, you know, we have to be realistic with it as well.
Overall, Gary, what do you take away from last night?
I take away that I think will be a match for the other two teams in the group as well, and I think we can definitely beat Feyenoord at home. I don't think that'd be kind of out of the realms of possibility. So, yeah, it's not an ideal start, but away at the top seeds in the group is always going to be tough.
You're paying no attention whatsoever to Celtic's record at home in Europe. Have you had a look at it?
That's in the past.
Shug. But you're telling me that without doubt Feyenoord will suffer at Celtic
Park. No, he didn't say that at all. He didn't say that at all. He said it wasn't beyond the realms of possibility, which, let's be fair, you didn't. I don't, if you want me to place money on it right now, I don't know if I'd be confident that Celtic beat them, but it wasn't.
It's not
a ludicrous thought. You put words in Gary's mouth majorly. Well, is it beyond the realms of possibility that Celtic win that game at Celtic Park?
For me, yeah.
It's beyond the realms of possibility.
Based on their record.
Come on.
Based on their record.
What about based on yesterday's game?
Yeah, well, base it on yesterday's game first.
Well, if you can guarantee me that Celtic will
No one's trying to guarantee anything.
Well, therefore, I can't guarantee you any answer then.
That it's not beyond the realms of possibility.
Based
on Celtic's
record at home they would have to have one heck of a performance. And before they get to Feyenoord, they've got Lazio and then Atletico Madrid back-to-back at Celtic Park. Celtic's European adventure with regard to the Champions League will hinge on those two games, Lazio and Atletico.
Sometimes you can spin it both ways, Marvin. We don't know which it is yet because we've only played one game. It does kind of seem like Celtic's group might be quite tight with the ability for teams to beat each other. That can go against you in a strange way because sometimes you might want one team to run away with it. I mean, what about the other game? We'll give it a quick mention. What about the goalkeeper?
I got one coming up and scoring.
A 95th minute equaliser. Amazing stuff. Because Gary says, you know, the top seeds in the group, which they are, but they are because they won the Dutch title.
Yeah.
Not because they're miles better than Lazio and not because they're miles better than Atletico Madrid. But Atletico
are better than Feyenoord for me.
So it's going to be interesting to see how the group does pan out, isn't it?
Yeah, it will be tough. But like you said, it is a good thing because, you know, anyone could beat anyone within that group, and that's how Celtic will have to look at it. I think if Celtic play against the same Feyenoord that they played against yesterday and Celtic have a fully fit team, I think at Celtic Park they beat them. I disagree with you on that one.
But Feyenoord you can take out of the equation for now, because unless Celtic beat Lazio and Atletico...
On Gary's point though, of what he was saying, I know what you're saying as well. You know, if they don't win those two games, then it almost becomes a kind of a dead rubber. Yeah. They don't qualify.
What about Peter, who's also a Celtic fan? What are you thinking at the moment, Peter?
Hi, I was just having problems with my phone there, but I'm phoning from my landline now.
We've got you loud and clear, don't worry about that.
Gordon, Marvin... and Hugh, I guess the essence of my is a statement or a question. Celtic have got all this money in the bank. I guess the question is infrastructure investment versus team investment. I was saying to your producer, Chris, by the way, I'm not going to single out any players tonight. It's a team effort, and I'm not going to scapegoat anyone. So I'm not going to talk about individuals. But obviously, last night we had, I don't know about calamities as previously mentioned, but there were individual moments. My point is that this just keeps on happening. It's been happening for years. It happened with the Martin O'Neill team in Seville. It happened with the end of the Martin O'Neill era. It happened with the 10 in a row, going for 10 in a row team where we didn't quite make it. And this season, again, we seem to be prioritising. We've got lots of money in the bank, but we're prioritising infrastructure like Lennox Town and Barrowland and all that, which is all great stuff. But it's a bit speculating to accumulate. You've got to invest in the team. And I think during the close season, I think down the spine of the team, and I'm not going to mention individuals, but right down the spine of the team, if we had added a bit more, and also about not just young players, because we're obsessed with this buy, sell, buy cheap. You know, we're obsessed with that. We need a bit more experience. The team, Cal McGregor's carrying a lot on his shoulders. I just want to know your thoughts on that.
I think you raise a very interesting point, because you know, by Celtic's own declaration, they have £73 million in the bank. But for me, did not spend wisely enough in the transfer window now closed. Last night, a succession of players were either on the park at the start or brought onto the park piece by piece. And they are projects. They are not, if I can use the phrase, time-served football players yet. And they're playing at the game's highest club level. And I think that Celtic did not bring in enough oven-ready players when they had the opportunity, and I think it shows.
I always, as a kind of matter of routine, defend that slightly, Marvin, because I think for our clubs to sign Champions League oven-ready players is probably impossible. But is Celtic squad stronger than it was last season? And that really is what the Celtic fans are coming down to. They had another treble in the bag. You know, they a lot more money and made money off Jota. I think they were just all hoping that they would be tooled up a bit more for the Champions League ultimately. And as Hugh says, you know, well, sorry, as Brendan Rodgers said, you know, it's a kind of naivety or inexperience, whatever he said about the red card. But I don't mean to pick on this one player, but you signed Odin Thiago home, and he was going to have to go into these environments And then is it his naivety or is it inexperience that gets him sent off?
Yeah, you make a great point. Like you were saying there, they didn't sign players who were ready for kind of that next level. I think what Celtic have done, looking at their transfers, is getting players in that will then win them the league again, and they can get the experience through the Champions League of Celtic being in this season. So come next season, they are more oven ready, as Hugh was saying there. Will they be completely ready for Champions League football? You know, we can't see into the future, so we're unsure of that. But those players domestically will be good enough. So I think what Celtic have done is try to buy players who add value to them domestically. They can't afford to go out and buy players in the Champions League that, or have played in the Champions League that are going to improve them within that competition. They cost far too much money.
I think the point the caller is making is basically, is Celtic a football club or a bank? You know, you win nothing by holding up your balance sheet, and you cannot fault any business for running their business very prudently, very carefully, and very successfully. However, Celtic is a football club, and it's not just the European dimension that's been a letdown. Domestically, they're not playing in a convincing fashion.
It's early days, though, Hugh, in terms of that, though.
And still top of the league, aren't they?
Yeah.
So. But.
No, I take the point. Just, Peter, you sound concerned overall. You're not taking any positives from, you know, being sort of in the game for 40 minutes or anything like that. You've got worries about this group?
No, I'm taking lots of positives because I thought for the first 40 minutes, we more than matched Feyenoord. I agree with previous callers. I don't think Feyenoord are nearly as good as what they were made out to be. And I also think that we could beat this team at Celtic Park. Of course we can. The point I'm making is we need more experience. It's like, I think Hugh was saying, you know, you're not going to get oven-baked Champions League players, but if you look at the middle ground, there's a lot of very good players in Europe who are untapped at the moment, who are very good, who could step up to the mark. Very good experience. The point
like who,
I'm making
Peter?
Is experience. We've got too many young players who are naive, and you know, now of course we could do well in the Champions League if we made some wiser signings, and I just feel that we just keep so often we're obsessed with money, and if you actually focused more on the actual team and the experience that the team needs and older heads and having a mixture, then you've got a much better chance in situations like last night. I think we've got a lot of really good players. If you project this team 2 or 3 years down the road, if you're able to keep those players, you have a fantastic team.
But the model,
this development,
the model suggests though that you don't want to keep them. The model suggests that you get them in at the £2 or 3 million level, and then hope to sell them for 10 times
That's the challenge, isn't it, Marvin? Because like, again, to cut Lager Bielka a bit of slack, maybe in another injury-free world, he doesn't play last night and he's not there because Carter Vickers is and Navrotsky is, even though he's a new signing. But Yang and Luis Palma, they're there as sort of main options, really. They're going to have to contribute to Celtic's Champions League group, and it comes thick and fast.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and that's what have been brought to the club. I think all players that they've brought to the club, you know, they'd obviously be confident if they have to play in the Champions League. But it's just the way that, you know, our game works and the finances that we do have. You have to bring in players like Hugh saying for £2 or 3 million and try and sell them on. But if Celtic can do that with three more players, you know, produce three more Jotas, for example, then the next time they go out and buy these players, they're £6 or 7 million, you know, because your profits are bigger. So you then start to bring in better players. That's the only way we can close the gap.
Okay, thank you, Peter. Good time to call. We'll try and get you on next. Oh, it's been a big old week. Well done to Claire, the latest person to win on Make Me a Winner. She's planning to take the family to Disney and buy a load of Lego for her 2-year-old son Liam. Now, I know Lego's expensive, right? But over 70 grand, you'd like to think you could win a fair bit. And we could make you the winner of £77,000 tomorrow when we make another call. But you have to be in the draw. So text YES to 61025. Texts are £2 plus your standard network rate. You can enter at Clyde1.com. And online entry is £2 as well, or you can call 0330 880 4523 with calls charged at a standard rate, and it's over 18s only. So all the rules for this network competition are online. And here's the other important bit: if you get the call from us after 3 p.m. tomorrow
Answer within five rings and say make me a winner straight away to win £77,000. So text yes to 61025 for your chance to win. Good luck from us.
141-951-1025. This is Scottish football's league leader, Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Hugh Keevans and Marvin Bartley are here. It's 141-951-1025, or it is Twitter at Clyde SSB. Get your calls in. Looking back on last night's defeat in Rotterdam, Celtic down to nine men. Big moments within the game. Bigger, wider picture as well being discussed by the guys. So get your thoughts in right now, Rangers fans. Looking for you to hop on board very soon indeed, because Nicholas Raskin is the latest player to be out injured. What's going on there? How big a blow will that be? How will you fix that issue, particularly tomorrow? And how does it affect your confidence going into the game in the Europa League? Let us know on that usual number or on Twitter. Whilst you get your calls in, let's hear a bit more from Brendan Rodgers, who, despite the defeat, does believe his side showed that they can challenge in the Champions League.
The players showed great attitude and courage. In that first 60 minutes, we were well in the game, and we created chances. And like I say, with a wee bit more finesse and better decision-making, we could have been in front. So that gives me great confidence for the remainder of the group. We've been dismissed as maybe a team that's not at this level, but I think we showed tonight against a really good team that we can compete at the level for sure. Got one or two more players coming back over through the course of the tournament, then that'll hopefully put us in really good stead. We play Feyenoord in the last game in the group stage, and what tonight showed me is that we're going to be competing and fighting in this group. But the big point for me was their spirit was never broken.
So much always gets said about style, Marvin, and whether team, whether Celtic in particular, should, you know, change what they do or adapt to what they do. And Celtic lost last night, but it wasn't down to that stuff, really, was it? I mean, you saw Celtic get after Feyenoord, and it worked. It didn't work because they didn't win the game, but yeah, you know, almost had a bit of joy out of it, as Brendan Rodgers saying, if they could have just found that final pass.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, he's taking some positives out of the game, but like we always speak about, when you're playing in the Champions League, it is the top end, because that's where, you know, the real money makers are for you. So, you know, I think probably talking about Hatate, could he have passed the ball to Kyogo to give him a better opportunity? You know, one or two other things up there. So that'd be something they need to learn from. You know, he's also said they, you know, when they play Feyenoord next time, then, you know, they'll be able to compete with them. But as Hughes also said, they've got, you know, big games coming up between that. So there's a lot of positives for Celtic to take, I think, especially from the first half. There's a lot of learning experiences in terms of the red card, etc. But, you know, I'll say it again, I think a fully fit Celtic team, you know, I think they'll be able to compete with all the teams in that group, if I'm honest.
Let's bring in Greg in Stirling. What's your feelings on last night overall, Greg?
Hello, Gordon. Hello, panel.
Hello.
I don't think we were a million miles off. I don't think, well, obviously we've never done enough to get anything from the game, but I think at that level it's fine margins. I mean, I was saying to the producer, even silly things to me anyway, like Kyogo being in the wall, I don't even know why he's there. He's a wee guy, you know. I mean, that Marvin's obviously doing his he's a pro license for the UEFA. He'll know more than me, but to me, I don't get it. Like, obviously Joe Hart, once upon a time, was a world class keeper. He knows what he's doing with setting up his wall, of course. But it's just wee things like that, and I think when they go 1-0 up, especially at that time going into half time, they're on the ascendancy. You know, I think it's these things like this that,
yeah, I know the Celtic fans out there, Greg, someone will know the answer to this. It's not something I've noticed. Is Kyogo normally in the wall? Is he normally at that position in the wall for Celtic? I genuinely have no idea.
I have no recollection of ever seeing him there.
But would you be confident in that? Because I'm kind of the same, but I just don't know. I just don't feel like I've ever paid any attention.
I think someone
can dig out some footage during the news and send it to me.
I think the timing of the goal, as well as the execution and the defending of the goal, are important here, because Celtic had matched Feyenoord. Feyenoord were not what was allegedly on the tin, and Celtic were doing away quite nicely. And then at that worst possible moment, Kyogo makes the mistake, Joe Hart makes a mistake, and between them they cost Celtic the goal. If you want to say fine margins and that's why Celtic lost, okay. But I think that overall, Celtic did not do anything remotely near enough to draw or win the match.
Yeah, I think Greg did acknowledge that as well. I mean, Greg, does it get better from here? You know, Hugh and Marvin are pointing out that although they were the top seeds in the group, that there's every chance that, you know, Atletico Madrid are as good, maybe better. How do you feel about Celtic's chances overall and where they are in the Champions League?
Well, to answer your last part, I think we belong there, for sure. I don't think it's... I know I said it before, I don't think we're a million miles off. I know that was just one game, but in general, even looking back, of course, when we got beat 7-0, I forget the other scoreline, but to Barcelona, PSG, but then they beat each other by those scorelines at different times. It's just, I think there's too much read into that. To answer your question, Gordon, I think we do belong there. I'm obviously hoping for the best, but it's all down to, I know it's easy to say, on the day and on the night, take our chances. I believe we're at that level. Put it that way. I don't think we're out of place there, but it is quite frustrating. I mean, I'm a diehard Celtic fan, and it is frustrating when you see the same thing kind of over and over.
That's kind of what we were on about earlier. It just feels like, if you look, there's two teams, to state the obvious, you like, you get sometimes a team can play really badly and they might just nick a result and they might nick something. It's somehow hard to see Celtic doing that in Europe. Does that make sense? That maybe even they perform worse than they did in some of the games last season, or they perform, you know, they have some sort of adversity, but they somehow get away with the result. It's, at the moment, it's either well beaten by a much better team like Real Madrid, or then we come back to fine margins. What combination is it going to take to get the positive result?
The moments. You know, Gordon Strachan had his moments in the Champions League. Neil Lennon had his moments in the Champions League. But results in the last few years would tend to suggest that they don't belong there, and that no Scottish team belongs there. We hide behind the phrase, we're Europa League teams. And then they start to drop out of the Europa League into the Conference, etc., etc. I don't think at the moment you could truthfully say Celtic belong there.
I've just got a really boring thought on that, and it's that if you qualify for it, you belong there. There's however many, is it 32 teams in it? Somebody's going to be the 32nd best team in it. Somebody's going to be the 31st best team in it, and therefore you belong there. That's just my sort of boring take on it. But I get what people mean when they get stuck into that argument.
Yeah, I think it's as you said there, it's extremely difficult for our teams at this moment in time to qualify out of these Champions League groups. I think, you know, third place would be a success for Celtic, if I'm honest, this season. And I think that probably, you know, the next few seasons going forward, and unless we get, you know, they get massive investment, etc. So in terms of belonging there, can they compete at a level where, you know, they're not embarrassed? Definitely. But I think it would be, you know, a good few years till we see one of our teams qualify at Champions League.
Thank you very much to Greg. What a quick hour that was. It's that time of the night already.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Come on then, it's Beat the Pundit time. Hugh Keevans and Marvin Bartley waiting patiently.
My specialist subject is taxis in a hurry.
Did you hear last night? Last night was an epic. I'll tell you all about it, and we'll play tonight's Beat the Pundit very soon. So get your calls in 01419511025, and you need to call by 7 o'clock.
Tackle the headlines. 01419511025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Marvin Bartley and Super Sub Hugh Keevans are here with you tonight. It's 01419511025. We have had a lot being said about Celtic's defeat last night, from red cards to position of players in the wall, goalkeeping errors, spending issues, recruitment. It's all been there. If you want to keep them coming, you can do. It might be a good chance to hear from you Rangers fans, though, because you're next up in Europe tomorrow. How do you feel generally about the game? I know you've not been in a brilliant place this season, according to these phone lines anyway. And add to that Todd Cantwell's injury last week. No Nicholas Raskin for tomorrow or the next few games either. Of course, Danilo injured at the weekend as well. So what do you make of that latest news? Your thoughts on tomorrow, get them in right now, and we'll speak to you after we play this.
Beat the Pundit with the Scottish Sun.
For the best football news and opinion online, thescottishsun.co.uk/football.
Right, it is Beat the Pundit time. Honestly, what I always say on here, please gamble responsibly. It's one of our big messages on here. Last night's contestant came on,
One, but there was a little sort of steward's inquiry, and he said, "All right, Gordon, double or quits on the tiebreaker." And then Gordon won the tiebreaker. It's always going to happen. But anyway, there we go. Let's hope for a bit more of a straight. It lasted about 20 minutes last night as well. So let's hope for more of a straightforward evening. Ryan is in Garthamlock. How's it going, Ryan?
Not bad.
Is this your first time?
It is.
Good, because that was another one last night. That was the added hilarity, was that it was the contestant's third go, and he still walked away with no ball because he gambled it stupidly. So Ryan, no rash decisions tonight, okay?
No, definitely not.
Top man. 30 seconds, we'll get in that clock very soon, but we have to find out who you're playing first. So I'll toss the coin. If it's heads, it's the super sub Hugh Keevans. You might be, I don't know, a little bit out of sorts because you didn't expect to be on the show tonight. Well, what would you have been doing if you hadn't got the call?
I was watching two of my grandchildren until their mum got back home from her teaching
duties.
That's
why you rushed down here so quickly.
I just left them at home alone.
Iran. I thought I heard reports of an elderly gentleman running up the switchback trying to get down here in time.
Well, and if you'd been another 5 minutes in making the call, I'd have uncorked the red as well.
That would have made for a good show.
Oh, brilliant.
5:15 at night. I don't judge, but anyway, please drink responsibly. Heads is Hugh, tails is Marvin, nearly. And it is heads.
I'm delighted.
What a busy night that you've had. Have you played in a while?
No, I haven't. This is fantastic. I like sitting here.
Okay, chuck me your pen then. Give me it. Go to good use.
Give you something.
Right, Hugh, give him some greatest hits radio to listen to. And we'll get Ryan's clock ready. Ryan, it is 30 seconds. Answer as many as you can. And if you want to pass and move on, that is fine by me, okay?
Right, okay.
Right, your 30 seconds then, Ryan, starts now. Rangers Europa League opponents Real Betis are from which Spanish city?
Betis or Seville.
Who is currently the Aberdeen captain?
Pass.
Which Scottish Premiership team have trees on their badge?
Pass.
Lewis Ferguson is the son of which former Rangers midfielder?
Barry Ferguson.
Who was the last Scottish men's player to score a goal at a major tournament?
Cal McGregor.
Which team have scored the most goals in the Scottish Premiership this season?
Celtic.
Only one SPFL club in Scotland is still to pick up a point. Who is it?
Edinburgh City.
Okay. Let's bring back Hugh Keevans. Can you hear us?
Bit of Niall Rodgers. How good was that, Marvin?
Nice. I was enjoying myself there.
Now I know why you're so keen to avoid it. The producers just told me you're still 0-2 this season. You've only played twice and lost them both.
No, that's not correct. No. I lost 1-0 and then won the next week because I was laughing at the contestant.
Getting dud information. Anyway, Hugh, same set of questions to you. You ready?
I am.
Your time starts now. Rangers Europa League opponents Real Betis are from which Spanish city?
Seville.
Who is the current Aberdeen captain?
Nick Devon.
Which Scottish Premiership team have trees on their badge?
Pass.
Lewis Ferguson is the son of which former Rangers midfielder?
Derek Ferguson.
Who was the last Scottish men's player to score at a major tournament?
Craig Burley.
Which team have scored the most goals in the Scottish Premiership this season?
Celtic.
Okay. What are we thinking, Ryan?
I don't know, a couple of questions I've done quite poor on, a couple I've done alright, so I don't know.
Oh, talk to me about the first one, Ryan.
Oh,
you knew it. It's the rule I feel guiltiest about on here when it's I have to accept your first answer. You wouldn't have heard it. Ryan said, Betis Seville. He just knew it, but he's got it wrong. Do you know what it is? Scottish football and Seville don't mix very well. We never get the results that we're looking for, so everyone's trying to. And I noticed, where is Scotland's game against Spain? It's in Seville.
When Celtic played in Porto or against Porto 2003 in Seville.
You were there.
And our hotel was directly across the road from the Real Betis ground.
There you go then. So you were bound to get that right, and you did. 1-0 to Hugh Keevans. The Aberdeen captain is
Graham Shinney.
He knows it now. It's no use. 1-0 to Hugh. Come on, both of you, get with it. Which Scottish Premiership team have trees on the badge? Fir Trees. Park.
The Steel Men. Well.
High flying Motherwell. Beaten at the weekend though. Lewis Ferguson is the son of Derek, not Barry. Ryan, it's 2-0 to you. You did pull one back though, because Callum McGregor was the last Scottish men's player to score a goal at a major tournament.
You're
nearly there. Nah, he's only 20 odd years out. You're thinking the World Cup, obviously.
Yeah.
The Euros.
Of
Of course,
right. Do you know what my memory of this is? Because it sums up the difference. He's just been, he's seen it all before, so he's just not going to get excited about this stuff. We did live shows at the Euros for the dry, from the Drygate, and when Cal and I'm a really a sort of emotional Scotland watcher. Anyway, and when Callum McGregor scores, it's on video. Not just me, but the rest of the guys. We sort of jump up, we cheer. The crowd's going. He is just sitting like this. Just arms barely even cracked a smile. That's why he's forgotten about it. So it's 2-1 to Hugh. Celtic have scored the most goals in the Premiership, 11 so far. So you both got it. Hugh stays one in front. But Ryan got one more question. Now Ryan did not even know that Betis are from Seville. He did not even know that Lewis Ferguson is the son of Derek. But he did know that Edinburgh City is the only club in Scotland still to pick up a point. There you go, Ryan. You've plucked that from somewhere. Well done to you. It means we go to the tiebreaker. So here is the deal. I will read the question. I'll get Hugh to write his answer down.
You'll have to give me a pen.
And I'll then invite you to give me your attempt, Ryan, okay?
That's fine.
Let's do it. Very simple. How many different teams have won the Scottish Cup? Write it down, please, Hugh. How many different teams have won the Scottish Cup? Let's see your answer if you can. And I will take your attempt, Ryan.
15.
15 says Ryan. 19 says Hugh. It is 25. Wow, hard lines, Hugh. Ryan. He's done. Listen, Ryan, you lost to a guy who was at the first Scottish Cup final. So he remembers Queen's Park's victory very well. So you were hard done by. What are you thinking about your team tomorrow, Ryan? I know you're a Rangers fan. Are you confident?
I don't really know how to feel. I mean, obviously, the same Raskin was injured today. It's just put a wee bit of a downer because the midfield was kind of weak at the moment. So it's one of the ones that I'd rather put Nicole Raskin in the team. But I'm pretty confident. I feel if we can get a point out of the game, because I know that Betis are probably looking at one of the strongest teams in that group. So if we can get a point out of that game, I'd be happy. But 3 points is a must, as they say.
It feels like, Ryan, there have been times over the last few years where Rangers sort of outperform their domestic level in Europe. You know, you're thinking, do you still take confidence from that, or it just feels like there's been a lot of negativity about Rangers on these phone-ins this season?
I know, obviously, I'm quite confident, so it's just that slight bit of negativity, just because the way the season's went so far, like in previous games, and then obviously you look at the PSV game. The one at home wasn't really great with the 2-each draw, but in the away one was even worse. But I don't know, it's just one of them ones. Just you wait until tomorrow comes. I might feel a lot confident tomorrow, but I don't know.
Those, to counter my own point there, those just serve as a reminder that it can happen. But it's actually it's a different team now, isn't it? Some of those European nights were inspired by Ryan Kent and Alfredo Morelos, etc. Can this new crop of attackers do that? Can they go from looking slightly underwhelming in the Scottish Premiership to European?
What a watershed moment it would be for Michael Beale. You know, they haven't played well. The PSV Eindhoven experience was embarrassing for them. Now you're taking on a team from La Liga, and you're minus Cantwell and Raskin and Danilo, and you haven't been playing well into the bargain. Now, to beat a team from La Liga at Ibrox would be a tremendous result for Rangers, and they would presumably kick on from there.
Thank you to Ryan playing Beat the Pundit and giving us his thoughts there as well. Let's quickly bring in Drew, who's a Rangers fan in Cumbernauld. How would you sum up how you feel about Rangers going into tomorrow, Drew?
How you doing, Gordon? Hugh, Marvin?
I'm
listening to Ryan there, Gordon, and I'm the same. I always fancy Rangers on the night, and I'll never ever know. I wasn't the one in the camp where I wanted to see Michael Beale go, and I'll always back the manager, but I just can't help but feel concerned about Gordon Owen. I'm looking at St Johnson game and 2-0, but I wasn't convinced with the performance. And I heard a caller last week saying, if they get beat off Betis, where does Michael Beale's situation lie? And Rangers fans demand success in Europe since a couple of years ago. And I'm looking and thinking, Raskin's out, Cantmill's out, who's been a massive player, probably the best player for Rangers, and Dill's out, and now Danilo, and I can't help but think if we get beat off Betis and then into Sunday against Motherwell, it's concerning times for them, I think. No, and I wouldn't like to see them lose you too, but I can't help but feel concerned that we're in a lot worse situation than what they were on Saturday against St Johnstone there, and now looking into Motherwell on a Sunday, because I know he's been on about about it being about domestic football. No, and I'm just concerned that the result on Sunday might go against.
Does the Raskin injury, how much does that damage your confidence through?
Oh, millions, Gordon, because him and Cantwell, listen, some of the new signings have not really hit the ground running for me, and when the two of them came in, no, that was a sort of start of the rebuild, and I think a lot of Rangers fans held on to that and thought, no, we've got to trust in the manager with these new signings, but I think the players he's brought in just haven't clicked, and him and Cantwell have been magnificent since they came. But I'm looking at the boys Fuentes, and there was a lot of noise being made about him about the money that he could go for, and I'm just concerned that he's not got he's starting 11 nailed down. I look at Saturday there, and he's got Ben Davis in at centre back, and I think, where do we go for here? Do you know what I mean? And with the injuries list, who holds the weight? Does Michael Beale carry the weight for the injuries, or is there leniency if he does get beat up at some other level, that the injury list is something that lets him off the hook?
I've listened to Roger Hanna in recent days on the programme speak about Real Betis being pretty much a free hit for Rangers, but the caller is telling us that that's not how he sees it. He wants to see a positive result, positive display, carry that into Motherwell in the league on Sunday. First of all, the team selection will be fascinating. Yilmaz will obviously drop out from the team that played at the weekend because he was not in the European group to begin with. Who plays up front? Too many matches in quick succession for Kamar Roof, or not, as the case may be. Dessers, who continues to split opinion, will he come in? So the team selection will be fascinating. And I don't think it's a free hit. I think Rangers, after the 7 goals home and away against PSV, have to avoid an embarrassment in Europe. And it'll be interesting to see Pellegrini, great coach, a man of high calibre, but how much has a 5-0 defeat against Barcelona taken out of his lot?
What specifically are your thoughts on Raskin and that area, Marvin? Because I think a lot of Rangers fans who call in here would probably agree that Todd Cantwell and Nicholas Raskin, probably, it's not like they've been flying this season, but they're still considered amongst Rangers' more reliable players for sure. And even then, to go beyond that, you would still rather have the option, certainly. And I mean, they would both almost certainly have played tomorrow. So to not have either, and particularly this Raskin news, it's going to be a good few games anyway, along with Danilo. How big a blow is that?
It's a massive blow for them. Like you said there, that I'm not saying that they've been their best in recent weeks, but if you're picking the strongest Rangers team, both of them are in there, regardless of who's picking it. So that lets you know how big a blow it is for the football club. So it's a difficult one, but it's one they're going to have to kind of get by. They won't be able to make excuses, as Drew's saying there. In terms of tomorrow's game, I think a positive performance, if Rangers have a narrow defeat tomorrow against Real Betis, I don't think, anyone will be too shocked by it, or there will be too many complaints. But come Sunday against Motherwell, there can be no excuses. That is a game that they have to win. Domestically, they have to win that game.
You don't think there'll be too many complaints?
I think as long as there's a positive performance, I think so. As long as they can see something in terms of tomorrow's game, in terms of the performance, but you won't get away with that on Sunday.
Would your patience extend that far, Drew, if it was a good performance tomorrow but fell short on the night?
Hugh makes a good point. I've gone to a Rangers game beforehand and no fans for them. I'll always fans for them on the night, but Hugh makes a good point. No, Roof just coming back, Tom Lawrence has just come back. Are they going to last two games going to Betis? Because we're going to need them tomorrow when that game comes, because who else are we going to put on? And are they going to last two games going into Sunday? I don't know. And that's what concerns me, because it's going to be another two players doing if they don't.
Michael Beale has this perilous existence where he's judged game by game. Mm-hmm. PSV and Celtic created that kind of mood. The game at Perth, and you were there, Gordon, I thought Rangers' performance was fairly dire, but they scored 2 very good goals and they got the job done, and that was sufficient on the day. So now Michael Beale moves on to the next game, which happens to be Europa League, happens to be a team from La Liga.
So does that game by game thing, does it still apply, given it's an obvious step up in opposition, although they did lose 5-0 at the weekend?
I think for the majority of the Rangers fans, yes, it does. Because they keep pushing Michael Beale against the wall. We want to see good performances, we want to see good results, and we'll not settle for another PSV Eindhoven experience. So on short rations, having lost Raskin, Cantwell, Danilo, he will still be expected to win a home game, even against a team from La Liga.
Right, what do you think, Rangers fans, on that Raskin news? How big a blow is it? How would you fix it? What's your solution? What about the feelings overall going into the game? Michael Beale says it's now time for Jose Cifuentes to make his mark with Raskin out injured. He thinks the midfielder has shown promising signs, but believes it's time for him to kick on.
Well, I think he came in very late. I thought in his first couple of games he did some really good things. He had a fantastic cross against Savet, which should have been an assist. He had one also against Livingston where the defenders made a fantastic block from Cyril Dessa. So he's been unfortunate in that. And then he's been away on international duty, so this is his moment. He's been here for a while now. I said it recently that, you know, the new players have been here long enough now. He was the last one to come in, but I still think he's ready to go. He played against Argentina last week with his national team, so he's experienced. He's played in a World Cup, so he's an experienced player. I think the domestic games are a little bit more different than the European games for him, so let's see. I think he's clearly a talented player, and the more he plays for us, I'm sure everybody would be more aware of that. But he's a player that we brought in with high hopes for, and so this gives him an opportunity to have a run in the team now.
Come on then, what do you think, Rangers fans? Pick up that phone. And just before we move on, you mentioned Manuel Pellegrini. Have you ever been able to look at him the same since someone pointed out that he's a dead ringer for Head from Art Attack? Do you know who that is?
Yeah, I do know who that is.
How much does it look? How much? No. As if you watched Art Attack. He was in his 60s when Art Attack
I thought
was
his
on.
Children would have been watching it.
He doesn't
like him, yeah.
I didn't let them watch television.
No, okay. Just let
you can lean over to my screen, Hugh. Does this not ring any bells? Head from Art Attack.
Oh, no. I see. Yeah. Anyway. Manuel was better looking.
Good time to call. We'll get you on next. Taking your calls on Scottish football. 0141 951 1025. This is Clyde One's Super Scoreboard. Hugh Keevans and Marvin Bartley are here. It's 0141 951 1025. Going to hear a bit more from Michael Beale in just a second. So let's keep building up to that game against Real Betis tomorrow. How are you feeling, Rangers fans? Can you find some confidence in there? Are you fearing the worst? How important is progression from this group? How realistic is it? What about Nicholas Raskin's injury and so on? Give us a shout. 0141 951 1025. I do have a full time teaser for you, so let's get the question ready.
The full time teaser with Sliding Wardrobe Solutions East Kilbride. Tackle your customers' spaces with made to measure wardrobes.
I've got a slight concern with this question in that I think, despite his limitations, Marvin Bartley will absolutely scoosh this. Beyond.
No, you're putting too much pressure.
No, no, genuinely, I do.
Is it about red cards?
No. So I think.
Well, I've been doing the heavy lifting today.
I think we should I think we should sort of let Hugh do it, and then you can kind of help him where required. Right, I genuinely think this will be too easy for him, and you'll see why in a second.
Oh.
Speaking of red cards, did you hear you got a new nickname on the show last week?
What is my new nickname?
The Dodgem.
Who gave me that, why?
It was Mark Wilson. He's been on this show for about 15 years, it feels like. It's the funniest thing he's ever said. It was great. Because we're talking about you at the Masters, how you didn't really want the ball. Nope. You just wanted to bash into people. And Mark said, what is he? A dodger. And I thought, that kind of sums up his performance.
Wait, I'll sit next to him in here.
Listen, he'll be staying away from you. He's showing the camera. He's got bruises all over his arm. He was going like this last week. He's got bruises here, there,
he's showing his muscles off.
No, that certainly wasn't the case. But anyway, right. So the question, Hugh, that you need to answer, ably assisted by your pal here. Can you name the last nine players to be capped by Scotland whilst at Hibs? Okay, so the last nine players to be capped by Scotland whilst at Hibs. Marvin loves Hibs, so he would get this too easily.
Ryan Porteous.
Yes.
Great question.
Lewis Stevenson?
Yep, okay. And one more guess for now.
Oh, John McGinn.
Yes, he did get his first cap in 2016 whilst in the Championship at Hibs.
Correct.
And I remember on this show and others, why are we calling up players from the Championship?
He got a lot of stick for that, by
he's
the way.
Done all right, yeah. Hasn't he? Oh, he's
done okay, he's done the lad.
Incidentally, Marv, what about that? 33 1/3%.
Straight
just
away.
Like that.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I've not. And obviously, I get the logic, but that was a thing at the time, wasn't it? There was a big. Oh,
it was massive. Now, why is he in the Championship? And someone in the Premier League, Scottish Premiership, wasn't getting called up. And they were like, well, why is John McGinn getting called up ahead of him?
And was there not the story as well? It was like. I think, you know, Gordon Strachan made it kind of known that he was really impressed because John McGinn carried the kit or carried the hamper or something.
They got off to train somewhere and I think a lot of the players just headed off and went, and John was there helping the physios and the staff basically carry the kit off.
And then everyone was, oh, is that why we're giving players a game now?
did he...
Just you wait just now, don't worry. Don't give me more answers. You've got plenty of time. Let's hear a bit more from Michael Beale. Whilst you Rangers fans out there get your calls in on how you think tomorrow will go, what you think the team should look like in the absence of Nicholas Raskin, and anything else that does surround the fixture. Michael Beale hopes that playing in the Europa League can raise the level of his players. He believes it is a competitive group, but the expectation is to get out of it.
Well, the same as always, there's a financial element, but there's a competition element as well, and you're playing against teams with different styles that are obviously successful in their domestic league, and I think that challenge helps you domestically because obviously the level is high and your team have to get exposed to things, and hopefully it raises the level of your team and players. As a club, we have a huge tradition in Europe and the European Knights, and it's important that we have a good season this year in Europe. It's a good group that we're in. Two teams that won their championship last year. Obviously, Real Betis was sixth in La Liga and they won their group last year with Roma unbeaten. Obviously, Roma went to the final, so they showed their pedigree in the competition. I think they've recruited well in the summer. So, listen, it's a competitive group, but we're expected to get out of it.
Are they? Really?
Well, I think he probably means internally, certainly.
You know, it works one of two ways, this. You know, you have good results in Europe and it impacts favourably on your domestic form, or you have bad results in Europe and it impacts in a negative way. And Rangers have known that this season. You know, the PSV, Eindhoven experience, and then they play Celtic after that, a Celtic team seriously weakened, and Celtic win at Ibrox. So an earlier caller said he wanted to see Rangers do well tomorrow night and carry it into the Motherwell game on Sunday. But he was suspicious of Rangers not getting a good result and not doing as well as they might against Motherwell. So that's the fascination.
I mean, Betis have gone to Villarreal already and won this season, Marvin. So they sort of know what they're doing on the road. Drew at home to Atletico Madrid as well. People mentioned the most recent game. In the context of Rangers, we probably shouldn't, and no offence to Rangers, but we probably shouldn't read into a 5-0 defeat at the Nou Camp. It's probably not that relevant, unless they are severely psychologically damaged from it.
I think this game's the right game for Rangers because I think a lot of people out there were expecting Real Betis to win it. Also, Real Betis would be coming to Ibrox, going to attack Rangers. They're not going to sit behind the ball. And I think you might see, you know, speaking about the Rangers forwards, where we see a spark from, I think they might come in this game where domestically, outside of playing against Celtic, teams are just sitting behind the ball and starving them, you know, of space in behind, or, you know, balls coming to the box, people are touch tight to them. Where Real Betis will really be coming expecting to win this game of football. They're not going to be on a counter-attack. They're going to try and dominate the game. They're going to try and dominate possession. I think that will open up the game for Rangers. And that's why I think, you know, on their run to the final, we saw that Rangers were so much better in Europe because teams actually came and it was a game of football rather than teams sitting in.
Let's bring in Billy, who's a Rangers fan. I mean, no Nicholas Raskin. Billy, how much of a concern is that? What are you thinking more generally about tomorrow as well?
Yeah, obviously, Raskin's a wee bit of a doubt. Well, a big bit.
He's more than a doubt,
honestly.
Yeah, he's out for sure.
But I think tomorrow night is going to be I'm optimistic, if you know what I mean.
Where does that optimism come from, Billy? Because I'm not saying you're wrong at all, but I'm fascinated because I think a lot of Rangers fans still are, despite the fact that it's not been a blistering start to the season. So where does the optimism come from?
Well, the 52,000 people inside the Ibrox, the atmosphere is going to be absolutely electric, but it is in every European game. And I think the fans will spur on the team. I don't know. I want to see. I want to see a commitment for Rangers. I mean, that Beale keeps saying, you know, ah, we've got this, we've got this. But he's got to prove it. You know, the team have got to prove that they want to play for the badge.
On, I mean, that point,
52,000 people, you got 52,000 in Ibrox tomorrow night. And I really hope that they will drop to speed.
On that point, Billy, of the 52,000 people, what happened when Rangers played Celtic then?
Well, we're still there. I know a lot of people grumbled and all the rest of it. But European games are a whole different atmosphere.
Yeah, I think we've added a couple of thousand on to the capacity, but we won't split hairs over that. Look, it can happen, Marvin, and I know people may be looking for something a bit more cutting edge. We have seen it. I remember over the last few years, people not being that convinced by Rangers domestically, and then you watch them on a European night and think that they, you know, they had this sort of formula, but that doesn't necessarily last forever. Obviously, the PSV games were very disappointing, but again, is that because PSV were brilliant, Rangers were poor? Well, I guess we start to find out tomorrow.
Yeah, like you said, there's not a formula really to it. You know, I spoke earlier on about the game being more open because Real Betis will come there really believing they can win that game of football. The flip side of that is that probably outside of Celtic, you're playing against a team that can really punish you when you give them chances. And we've seen so far this season that Rangers have passed up a few chances that have been missed by the opposition domestically. If they do that again tomorrow, they're going to be punished. So it will definitely be an open game. I'm really interested in, you know, the team that Michael Beale selects because, you know, we've spoken about players that I don't think can play Thursday, Sunday, i.e. Aruf, Lawrence, for example. But he doesn't want to go seen as a weakened team tomorrow, saving players for Sunday. And then all of a sudden you're getting embarrassed at Ibrox.
But maybe apart from Kamal Roof, what is seen as weak and what is seen as strong right now? Because go back to the weekend, that looked like, just from the outside, a real concerted effort to play the players who hadn't been away on international duty. Mm-hmm. All the ones who'd been away were left out pretty much.
Yeah.
And we saw Danilo start, obviously has to go off. There's an opportunity then to bring Dessers on because he's the one that's been playing, but he's not the one that's brought on. Mm-hmm. Sima is, and Matondo joins in later on. So, you know, have they done enough? You look at, as Hugh referenced at the top of the show, Yilmaz played. He can't play tomorrow, so presumably Barisic, or I don't know, does Dejan Sterling play? Ben Davis came sort of from nowhere to go in, and John Souter was left out. What right now is what's strong and what's not?
What's the strongest team? No, you're right. It is one of those, isn't it? That sometimes you do look at the selection, and like you said, the boys who've been on international duty, you know, Souter being another one that didn't play in that game. But I think, you know, defensively, you know what their kind of strongest four will be tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I think Barisic will go back in at left back. I think Souter comes back in if it's their strongest back four. For me, the midfield area will be interesting. But like you say, when you go to the top end, is Sima seen as the one now that's going to lead the line, or is it Edessa? But, you know, one thing we do know for certain is that there has to be a positive performance tomorrow. And as I said, I think a narrow defeat, I think the Ibrox faithful will take that. But they need to see a performance and a strong performance going into Sunday.
I do think that they will not just take a narrow defeat. They want to see something more than that.
Do you think they expect to win that game tomorrow against Real Betis?
Rangers fans expect to win every time at Ibrox. If they were playing Barcelona tomorrow at Ibrox, they would expect to win. So it's an interesting one, but Gordon makes the most telling point of all. You can't second guess Michael Beale. Mm-hmm. Every time he picks a team, you think, where does he come from? And it will be like that tomorrow. I think...
especially going to have to not play Raskin, one that would have played.
Roof will be in the strongest team, won't he? If you're picking their strongest team, Roof will be in it. So if he plays tomorrow, I don't think he can play on Sunday because of the problems he's had.
Back to the old tested, perhaps, and, you know, the sort of Jack and Lundstrom, Fuentes, by the sounds of it.
There's no possibility, with the greatest respect to the mighty Well, there's no possibility of Michael Beale prioritising Motherwell over Real Betis. As I say, he's going game by game. And he has to, you know, keep on delivering it. He delivered on Saturday. It was unattractive, but he got there with two good goals.
Look, the way you look at it is that coming up against players like Isco will be good preparation for facing Lennon Miller, Callum Slattery and Blair Spittle on Sunday. Just you remember
that's
that
true.
You've seen the way those three are moving the ball this season.
From Pellegrini to Kettlewell.
Incredible, incredible. Thank you to Billy. How are you faring on this teaser, please, Hugh? Can we recap it quickly? The last nine players to be capped by Scotland whilst at Hibs. You've given me what so far?
Porteous, Stevenson,
and McGinn. Yep.
John McGinn. Did big brother Paul McGinn get a cap?
Yes, he got one. We'll get the rest of the answers and more of your calls next.
Number one for football in Glasgow and the West. 0141 951 1025. Clyde One Super Scoreboard.
Hugh Keevans and Marvin Bartley are here, and there's still time for you to squeeze in a call on 0141 951 1025. So let's get a quick recap of the teaser to make more room for some calls. Thanks to the Crazy Pony for sending it in. We're looking for the last nine players to be capped by Scotland whilst at Hibs. Marvin would squish this, we think, so we're letting Hugh do it with Marvin's help. You've given me Paul McGinn. You've given us
John McGinn.
Stevenson. Lewis Stevenson and
Porteous.
Okay.
David Marshall.
No. Because he only went to Hibs start of last season. Yeah.
Can you hear the sound of the wall coming up?
I'm enjoying that sound.
Liam Henderson.
No.
No, he's never been.
He started well. Hugh Keevans. Now he's fading fast.
I'm struggling a bit. Is it Paul Hanlon?
Yes, one cap. Okay, you can have that. How many have you got left then?
We've got five.
Okay, four to get. Right, let's bring in Richard and Livingston. How's it going, Richard?
Yeah, not too bad. You?
Yeah, good, thank you. Good, good. What are you thinking about Celtic's performance last night and maybe bigger picture overall?
Well, it's more to do with the transfer policy.
Yep.
I just think that I get the club, you know, buy low, sell high. We've never increased the buy low price. You know, everything's incremental. Like, whatever I bought for £1 10 years ago, I can't get now. Celtic have never changed. And I just think that with the money in the bank that we've got, there was clear areas that needed strengthened in the team. The left back and the goalkeeper, like, if you look at the goalkeeper, I'm not saying that Joe Hart's a bad one, but all we've got after that is Scott Bain. Mm. And last night, Feyenoord were consistently putting the ball to Greg Taylor because they knew that was a weakness. Now, if they know it's a weakness, then why didn't Celtic? We're not spending the money. We've got it in the bank.
Yeah,
we're continually buying it, like, around about £2.5 million, apart from Burnaby, who didn't work out. But we're not investing it at all. Yeah.
I think just in terms of accuracy, though, I think the point may still be valid in that Celtic should spend a bit more. But there have been a number of signings that have been more than that, and there have been some relatively. Look at Odson Edward,
yeah.
Jota, Cameron Carter-Vickers, even money spent, Christopher Julian. Even Mike Navrotsky and players like that are still considerably more than the £2.5 million that Richard spends. That doesn't mean he's entirely wrong, but I think, just to be accurate about that.
Yeah, of course. And I think the first thing to say is that the buy small, sell big philosophy has made Celtic tens of millions of pounds. Mm. They have worked the system beautifully.
What are they doing with it is Richard's
exactly,
next point, isn't
that's
it?
That's the point. I think... You look at all the activity that took place. You're bringing in Paulo Bernardo or Holm or Kwon or Yang. They're not ready. And, you know, never mind Europe. Take Europe out of the equation. They're not fully ready for the domestic football yet.
Possibly a bit early to know that, though, isn't it? Especially those ones you've just named. Barely seen them domestically.
Well... There may be a reason why you haven't seen.
Yeah, but they have, and I know it's not flying, but they have joined a treble winning side. You know, there wasn't major surgery required.
For me, there was a glaring need to get someone as backup for Kyogo. He's living on a game by game basis. You know, he disappeared up the tunnel to have his shoulder put back in on Saturday. One time, that shoulder will pop, and it won't be popped back in again.
and they require surgery. And if you take Kyogo out of the Celtic equation for weeks and possibly months, Celtic will suffer as a consequence, and they should have brought in someone as backup.
It's hard to replace him or bring him back up for him. I totally agree. Kyogo is a massive, massive player. And I think, you know, if they were to lose him, you know, the drop down to Ovat being disrespectful and the style of play is totally different. So it'll be a huge blow to them. Problem you have, Hugh, I think, is bringing in another striker. They have to know that they're backup to Kyogo. So that almost limits your market straight away. You know, it's not even one of those that you think, I'll get an opportunity in the team, I'll score goals, I'll stay in. Kyogo is, if he's fit, he's playing. I think we saw that last season with Jack Mackeson, that's why potentially he left the club. So it's a really, really difficult area, because I think we can all see it that maybe they should have brought in another striker, but I think you're extremely limited to the type of striker that you're able to get.
I mean, Richard, is it all about the amount spent? I know it generally sort of links to how good the player is, but if you look at how shrewd... Say, you know, Kyogo, that wasn't for a big fee. Hatate wasn't for a big fee. Is that just the unfortunate challenge? You just have to keep finding these gems.
No, it's the way it's spent. There's something not quite right. So when Brendan Rodgers, I remember the interview about Sped.
Yeah, I remember it. Yeah,
a billion winger. All we've brought in, well, we've brought in like both the centre halves because I had to, and then we brought in wingers. But Hugh was right. We did. Or are we doing the striker, because the Asian Cup's coming up in February, I think it is. We definitely needed a left back, and we needed something in goalkeeper, and nothing's been done about.
Yeah, there are certain areas, and because, by the way, look, last night was not Greg Taylor's fault. It's not where I'm going.
Hang on, sorry, to him. How good was Greg Taylor last season? He's one of the
No, but that's the point to get to that. Celtic have gone into a Champions League group stage with Greg Taylor at left back and no Bernabe in the European squad.
Yeah.
Right, so, and now all of a sudden, having been goodness knows where in the pecking order, are we led to believe that Liam Scales is the backup left back for a Champions League group stage? It wasn't a reflection on Greg Taylor.
Yeah.
It's more... How did that happen?
How
do you get there, Hugh? Where?
You know, Greg Taylor is another one who suffered temporarily or otherwise from the change of management.
Yeah, but again, this isn't even about criticism of him. It's just more about recruitment, I think.
Yeah. And recruitment will be a recurring theme for Celtic as long as the Champions League progresses, because they are going to have tremendous difficulty against Lazio at Celtic Park and then Atletico Madrid at Celtic Park. And Liam Scales has been wonderful against all expectation. The guy from Shamrock Rovers, who had previously only played one European qualifying tie for Shamrock Rovers against Slovan Bratislava, has been tremendous for Celtic. But, you know, I agree with the caller. Money was spent in the summer, and good money, but it was spent on players you hope will make the team in the fullness of time. And I'm not saying you should have been buying Harry Kane, because obviously you couldn't, but players of greater experience should have been brought in.
So you're not holding out much hope for this group, or are you, Richard, despite what you've said?
It depends on the injuries, to be honest. I think the back, I think we have a chance to get. I think we can beat Feyenoord at home. I think Lazio was a really bad one to get in top three, but we've got a chance.
We will see. It's going to be an interesting few weeks. Thank you, Richard. Moving swiftly on to our other European representative, Aberdeen go from joint bottom of the Scottish Premiership, no wins to date, to taking on a team that, sorry Rangers fans to remind you, won the Europa League the season before last. How tough an ask?
That's a massive, massive ask for Aberdeen. An extremely tough one, like you said. I think Hugh has mentioned it earlier. I saw them against Hearts and they looked out of sorts. You know, Robson's spoken about that they'll be okay and et cetera. The players that they've brought in, they just need time to gel. But that's not a place you want to be going with players trying to gel. I think it's a huge game. It's one that, you know, if they're not careful, they could be on the end of a really big scoreline. They have to start the game. I know Aberdeen like going man for man and pressing all over the place, but it's going to be a difficult game. I think we could see Aberdeen go with a slightly different tactical approach and maybe sit off the game because, as I said, if you go out there with those kind of tactics, you get in trouble.
Did they not? I mean, they launched the ball long.
Well, they went long with it, but I mean, out of possession, they were going man for man and they were all over the place.
They're launching it long to a player, Duke, who hasn't scored for 13 games in the bounce now. And defensively at Tynecastle, they were inept. And you shudder to think, if you are inept in Frankfurt, what will happen to them?
Should we, you know, because we're used to doing the Glasgow thing here, and if I don't know exactly what the equivalent would be, so I won't try, but Celtic or Rangers, would it be roughly like coming up one against one of the absolute elite sides in Europe? You know, in relative terms, Aberdeen to Frankfurt. So should we be cutting them some slack? Should it be a free hit, as the annoying phrase goes?
Yeah, as much of a free hit as you're going to get in football. I think that definitely. I don't think, you know, the most optimistic Aberdeen fan will be expecting to go into that game and win it. They just, again, just want a good performance.
What does remain then, Hugh? Because, like, if it was Celtic or Rangers, that is fine, but you still need to avoid the real heavy ones, don't you? That's where it becomes, like, not as acceptable.
I'm told by those who were there that the Aberdeen players went to acknowledge the Aberdeen fans at the end of the game at Tynecastle and were told to go away. I think that's the polite way of saying it. So the Aberdeen fans are restless. They don't like what they're seeing. And, you know, fans are unforgiving. They won't say, we are off form and this is a team from the Bundesliga.
No, they will to a point, though. That's what we're saying, though, no?
Well, if it gets very bad, then they reserve the right to say, this is awful, sack the manager, what's happening here?
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting game, that one, tomorrow for sure. The big midweek of European action does continue, so make sure you join us to build up to kick off for Rangers and Aberdeen. But we're nearly out of time on this teaser, and thanks again. Oh, by the way, what a faux pas on the teaser. Jerry and Erskine has called in to say, that's my teaser, and we accidentally thought it was the crazy pony. I stand corrected. Well done to Jerry and Erskine for sending
Jerry.
It.
Come on, Pep.
Players to be capped by Scotland whilst at Hibs: Porteous, McGinn's Paul and John. You give me Paul Hanlon, you give me Lewis Stevenson. Quick.
Are the others pre me, I would take?
Yeah, probably. A bit of a mix.
Kevin Thompson?
No. After that. Oh. What about a kind of recent one, striker?
That now plays for
Millwall.
Oh, Nisbet.
Kevin Nisbet. that's a tough one, right? Two caps in 2019, so under sort of Alex McLeish. He was on loan from Reading at the time.
Under who?
At Scotland.
Oh.
He was on loan from Reading. Played for Dundee United.
Ah, McNulty.
Mark McNulty. Started his career at Celtic, also played for Aberdeen, been down the road, Dylan McGeoch.
Oh.
And happened to score for Scotland against England twice from free kicks.
I don't know who that is. No idea.
That would be the boy Griffiths.
Lee Griffiths. He got one cap whilst on loan from Wolves in 2012. So there we go. I think that's us, isn't it?
Did Dylan McGeoch not play for the Republic of Ireland?
No.
No. Maybe at youth level he did.
Oh, maybe, but he's got a Scotland cap. Yeah. So there we go. Thanks again to Sliding Wardrobe Solutions, East Kilbride, for helping us out with that. 6 o'clock tomorrow, it is Gordon Dalziel and Charlie Mulgrew. So make sure you join us. Callum Gallagher's up next. He's got music from David Guetta and Little Mix for you.